Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is an Apostrophe podcast production.
As we regret to inform you, the Rejection Podcast.
I didn't want to be an artist. I felt like I had lived that dream, and it was destroyed. Missy Elliott. When Missy Elliott was a little girl, she already had a growing, loyal fan base. Her G.I. Joes. One by one, she'd line them up on her bed, twist their arms straight up in the air, and serenade the adventure team with her favorite tunes. It was the 70s, so she'd start with the Temptations, then maybe slip into a little Marvin Gaye, and end on a Jackson 5 showstopper. Between songs, she'd take her doll's tiny hands and clap them together, imagining their screams and cheers like she was a bona fide superstar. At age 4, Elliott started writing her own songs. And it wasn't long before she was ready to trade her plastic crowd for a real, live audience. So, she stepped out onto the sidewalk, made a stage out of trash cans, climbed on top, and serenaded the unsuspecting people of Jacksonville, North Carolina. Sometimes, passersby would clap, drivers would honk, spurring the kindergartner to sing louder and prouder. That is, until the sun inevitably set, her fans disappeared into their homes, and Elliott's mother made her hop down and call it a night. Elliott remembers these days as the happiest of her youth. Unfortunately, they were fleeting. Elliott says she didn't really have what you'd call a childhood. Her father was a Marine, and her mother a stay-at-home parent. The family moved around quite a bit, following her dad to whichever coastal town he was stationed next. But eventually they settled in Portsmouth, Virginia, where the family rented what they could on her father's wages, a small, propane-heated shack. They couldn't afford to pay their bills, so many winter's nights were spent zipped into sleeping bags or wrapped in military blankets. Without running water, the bathroom was a small pot next to Elliot's bed, and the place was crawling with mice. Elliot remembers being awoken in the night by her father smacking her with a newspaper because a mouse had scurried across her body while she slept. Breakfast was bread with butter, and so was dinner. Her mother kept the loaf inside the dryer drum to keep it safe from rodents. Most days, it was just Elliot and her mother. Being a Marine, her father was away often. But when he did come home, things only got worse. Elliot's father abused her mother in deeply disturbing, violent outbursts and in front of their daughter. Elliot spent every day afraid this would be the day she'd come home to find her mother dead. So she never slept at friends' houses, not even as a respite for herself. The only place she could escape without abandoning her mother was her bedroom. Without money for notebooks or paper, it was there she'd write songs, sometimes on the walls or floors, songs about her fears, her anxiety. She says watching her mother be abused was so painful. It was like being beaten herself. So she made a vow. One day she was going to become so famous she could afford to take her mother away. One day she would rescue her. There were nights when Elliot's parents weren't arguing, but they weren't speaking either. Relegated to their corners, they'd each put on a record, loudly, to drown out the other. Her father was an R&B man. He'd blast Prince, Al Green. Her mother was a disciple of gospel music. From her bedroom, Elliot could hear both genres playing simultaneously, fighting one another, a perfect allegory for her parents' relationship. And she just sat there, absorbing both sides like a sponge. Through the noise, Elliot's musical aperture began to widen. Interesting how different genres could layer on top of one another. And she began cultivating her own varied taste. Her favorite group was the Clark Sisters, a quintet out of Detroit known as the First Ladies of Gospel. But she also worshipped at another family shrine, the Jacksons. And soon, when her parents would fight, she had a collection of her own to turn up and drown it all out. Elliot spent her days daydreaming about one day writing a song for one of her icons. Standing in the mirror, hairbrush microphone in hand, she'd pretend she was on a stage, thanking Michael or Janet Jackson for embodying her lyrics. So, one afternoon, she decided to write to them. Elliot wrote letters to all her favorite artists, sometimes including tapes of her songs, begging them to rescue her. She collected stamps and sent them off. Elliot's fantasy was clear, that Michael Jackson would read her heartfelt letter and be so touched by her story and her talent that he'd pull up to her school in his limo, reach one gloved hand out the backseat window, and pull her from class, pull her from her life. Elliot says rain, sleet, or snow, she checked that mailbox. But when it turned up nothing but bills, she sobbed. Her mother said, naturally, many of the letters were returned to sender. Miss Diana Ross of Beverly Hills, California, had other things to do. Every Friday, Elliot's teacher would ask the class what they wanted to be when they grew up. Her classmates would rhyme off the same old list: firefighter, lawyer, doctor, teacher. But not her. Missy Elliott would stand up at her seat and say, I'm going to be a superstar. The whole class erupted with laughter. But she didn't waver. Come the next Friday, when her name was called, she'd say the same thing. she was going to be a superstar. By the time she reached middle school, Elliot's father's violent behavior escalated. Beyond abusing her mother, he was trashing their home. And the unrelenting fear was taking a major toll on the 13-year-old's mental health. She started having what she called breakdowns. It was too much. Then, her father pulled a gun on Elliot and her mother. Elliot begged her mom to leave, to take her away, to save them both. But her mother saw the best in the father of her child. And Elliot began thinking it would never happen. Freedom, not until she turned 18. And even then, she'd be leaving her mother behind. Then one morning, like any other, shortly after Elliot's 14th birthday, her mother pulled her aside. She said to pack everything she owned into a box, leave it there, then walk to the school bus stop as usual. Elliot's father typically left for work after she'd begun her walk to the bus. She'd watch him drive past every day. So that morning, she did what she was told. She packed the box, then started walking. On schedule, she saw her father's car drive past. But just as it disappeared out of sight, her mother pulled up beside her in a different car. She picked up her daughter and took her back home, where a moving van was parked in their driveway, and her box sat waiting to be loaded in. They left that day with a fork, a spoon, a plate, and a blanket. It was the scariest time of Elliot's life. Her mother said she finally made the choice she never thought she could. They were free. Elliot wouldn't see her father again for 20 years. Her mother drove their U-Haul to the other side of town, and together, they started over. It was 1985. Her mother took a job at a power company. Elliot was enrolled at the local high school. And for the first time in a long time, a mother watched her daughter thrive. At this school, Elliot was talkative, popular, voted class clown. She would strut around the halls, freestyle rhyming and playing locker percussion, or cafeteria table percussion, or backpack percussion. In the short walk from history to algebra, she could write an entire song. And if she wasn't singing, she was listening, these days to Salt and Peppa or Run DMC. In her senior year of high school, Elliot decided to start a hip-hop R&B group with three friends. They called themselves Fazy. Elliot was the ringleader, designated songwriter, rapper, and manager. They started performing local gigs, becoming somewhat of a small-town sensation. And that's when Elliot was introduced to a local MC. He was her age, lived one town over, but he had dreams as big as hers, to one day get out of Virginia and become a famous DJ slash producer. His name was Tim Mosley, but he went by a stage name, Timbaland.
And we'll be right back.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Missy Elliott wasn't sold on Timbaland right away. The supposedly innovative MC walked around with a Casio, perhaps the world's cheesiest-sounding portable piano. But once he laid down a beat, her songwriting wheels started to turn. And within 2 minutes, they'd come up with a song. Timbaland said he realized he'd found someone just like him, someone who breathed music. The pair started collaborating, and in no time, became inseparable. Every day after school, Elliott would go over to Timbaland's house. They'd tinker with cadences over his stuttering kick drum. She said they'd record from tape deck to tape deck until the sound turned fuzzy. Elliott was enamored by Donna Summer's Last Dance because it starts slow and ballad-esque. Then, out of nowhere, it's a dance song. It was refreshing that Summers didn't feel the need to choose. And it was that kind of wacky, boundary-pushing thinking that interested both Elliott and Timbaland. In the spring of 1992, the pair graduated high school and decided this was it. They were all in, ready to make a real go of their music careers. But where to start? Elliott's mom wasn't happy with her daughter's choice of career. She couldn't connect with rock and roll, hip-hop, or rap. If it wasn't gospel, frankly, she didn't get it. And she didn't like her daughter running all over town. She saw the music industry like a revolving door. People go in naive and come back out jaded. It was an unstable path, one that mocked the very idea of a college degree. She pleaded with her daughter to please choose something else, anything else, maybe the army. Elliott knew her mother and extended family didn't take her dreams seriously. No one from Virginia ever made it big. Famous musicians didn't even stop in Virginia on their national tours. But there was one place in Virginia Beach that showed a hint of promise it could advance her career. It was a funny-shaped building with the words Future Records splayed above two palm trees. By the mid-90s, the owner, Teddy Riley, was the reigning king of R&B, producing hit songs for both Janet and Michael Jackson. So Elliott got Faye Z together and set up a rigid rehearsal schedule. They would perform for Teddy Riley, secure a record contract, and fulfill the promise above those twin palms. And one afternoon, pipes warmed, they got up the nerve to pull into the Future Records parking lot amongst a sea of chrome and hydraulics and knock on the door. Faye Z performed a single song for Teddy Riley. But when they hit their final notes, instead of rolling out the carpet and a swift but lucrative record contract, he looked confused. He counted four singers, yet he only heard a two-part harmony. The 19-year-olds before him didn't have the chops or the experience to land a record deal. It was a no from the king of R&B. Elliot was heartbroken. They'd spent so much time rehearsing. Now she had no plan. Then she got an idea. Elliot's favorite group at the time was called Jodeci, led by rapper-songwriter Devontae Swing. Jodeci was four guys from North Carolina, known as the Bad Boys of R&B, who hit it big and even recently started their own record label. So when she heard Jodeci was performing nearby, she got Faze tickets. Determined to get noticed by Devontae Swing, Elliot made a plan. She would dress up all the Faze ladies like female versions of Jodeci, tap their signature style. Then she'd sneak them all backstage and perform an impromptu audition for Swing, blow his mind, then casually slip in the idea of a record contract. It was simple, really. So the night of the concert, the four of them snuck backstage, and they ran into one of the Jodeci founding members, Dalvin DeGreat. DeGreat sent them over to perform for another member, KC. KC liked them, so he pointed them down the hall to impress JoJo. And when JoJo liked their sound, he brought them to the ringleader, Devontae Swing. Faze took a collective breath, and after they poured their hearts out for a fourth time that night, Swing looked at them and said, "I'm gonna sign you and fly you to New York next week." Elliot didn't believe Swing. Still reeling from their future records rejection, it was feeling like no future records were in the cards. But here was someone she looked up to in R&B, offering her a deal with his label, Swing Mob Records. Elliot said next thing she knew, they were signing contracts they didn't even read. She said they may have just sold their souls to the devil, but they didn't care. They were going to be the next girl Jodeci. Though she did have one stipulation, that she bring along her collaborator and producer, Timbaland. And soon, Elliot, Faze, and Timbaland were on a plane to New York City. Swing Mob lived under the Elektra Records banner, a huge label that had signed the likes of The Eagles, Joni Mitchell, Motley Crue, Metallica, Tracy Chapman. Elliot couldn't believe her own life. At 20 years old, she was on top of the world. Together with Timbaland, she honed Faze's sound. Together with Swing, she honed their vision. And he made an executive decision to change Faze's name to Sista. Through Elektra, Elliot was introduced to Mary J. Blige. Blige had just recorded her top 10 hit, Real Love. She was the queen of hip-hop soul, and she took to Missy Elliot. She told her the other members of Sista were good. They were beautiful. But something about Elliot stood out. Then Elliot shared with Blige her concerns about fitting the music industry mold in terms of body type. And Blige said not to worry about that. She had the makings of a superstar. Elliot said those words from someone she considered to be a superstar implanted something in her brain. Taken back to Friday afternoons when her elementary school teacher would ask what she wanted to be when she was older, and the laughs when she said superstar. Now, here she was, standing in front of a successful black female idol, being told she had star power. Blige agreed to make a cameo on one of Sista's songs. And within 1 year, their debut album, All the Sistas Around the World, was ready for release. Sista started shooting music videos, and their very first single hit the airwaves. It made the charts, peaking at number 84. Then just as their album was all set to launch, a bombshell from the corner office. Jodeci and Devontae Swing were dropped from Elektra Records. It's reported the label just didn't see their vision. As a result, everyone else Swing brought to the label was dropped too, and Sista's album was DOA. As swiftly as it all came, Elliot's dream was over. She said it was an emotional roller coaster, not the thrilling kind. This album was her baby, and they took it all away. In an effort to salvage what was left of Swing's label, he decided to put together a sort of artist's compound, a place for his artists to collaborate, make music, learn from one another, and to create without suits hovering over their shoulders. 14 artists, including Sista, Timbaland, and R&B singer-songwriter Ginuwine. Together, they ate, drank, and breathed music. There, Elliot would hone her skills for speed writing, competing with Devontae Swing for best, fastest song. And through the compound, she even got a chance to work with Raven Simone, a total starstruck moment for Elliot, 10 years before That's So Raven, the little granddaughter from The Cosby Show, was starting a music career alongside her growing acting resume. And she was in need of singing lessons. Elliot worked with Simone and used her love of songwriting to pen a song for the budding singer called That's What Little Girls Are Made Of. Elliot recorded the backing vocals. And turns out, the song was a surprise hit, a charted hit. Soon, Simone was brought in to film a music video, but no one told Elliot. When the music video for That's What Little Girls Are Made Of was released, front and center was Raven Simone singing lead vocals. But behind her, singing backup, was a woman Elliot had never seen. Wait a minute, did they replace her vocals? Then it hit her. It was herself she was hearing, but it wasn't herself she was seeing on screen. Elliot realized she was watching a thin, conventionally attractive woman lip-syncing her vocals. She later found out she was purposefully left out of the project. Turns out she didn't, quote, fit the image they were looking for. Elliot said the direct translation was, "You're too fat." By 1993, the family culture of Devontae's artist's compound was devolving. Devontae Swing was becoming competitive, controlling, overly involved, the very qualities his safe haven for artists was designed to escape. And Elliot started to feel claustrophobic. Friendly competition over who could write the fastest song soon became aggressive. He was threatened by her abilities, and it wasn't long before it all reached a boiling point. One night after a contract dispute with one of his artists, Swing called a meeting, and the situation turned violent. He began throwing chairs across the room. What was teetering on emotional abuse already crossed the line into physical violence, and Elliot was done. She'd watched her father control, manipulate, intimidate, and trash their space for years. The difference this time was she could leave. Elliot turned to Timbaland and said, "I'm never coming back here." And she bought a one-way ticket home to Portsmouth. At this point, it was 1995. Missy Elliott was 24 years old. Sista disbanded. She watched her dream of becoming a hip-hop star go up in smoke. And now she had to face her family, the same family that likened the industry to a revolving door. She'd gone in a dreamer, and here she was, spit back out, completely defeated. She prayed for another opportunity, but knew deep down it would never come. She was back to square one. No connections, no leads. She started mulling over her mother's original proposition to sign up for the army. But she needed money now, so she considered applying to the local McDonald's. Elliot was the first artist to leave the compound, but she wasn't the last. Soon, Timbaland reappeared in Portsmouth. But he wasn't defeated. He had a plan. Timbaland told Elliot he took a meeting with Atlantic Records. They were working with Aaliyah, an up-and-coming R&B sensation of the 90s. Aaliyah was in the market for fresh songs to make up her second album. Timbaland and Missy Elliott were nobodies. Nobodies. But Timbaland presented their sound to the executives, the sound he and Elliott conceived all those years ago in his parents' basement. He explained what made their work unique, with its marriage between R&B and pop. The hurdle was getting people's minds out of those boxes. Aaliyah got their vision immediately, and Missy Elliott and Timbaland were hired, commissioned to both write and produce her next album. And suddenly, they were off to New York for a second time. It was all so unfathomable, because Aaliyah could have worked with anybody. But Elliot says from the moment the three got together, she treated them like family. Elliot was happy with this arrangement, not only because it was a dream gig for any songwriter, but because she could grieve her lifelong goal of being an artist and move forward. Behind the scenes, no one would be looking at her body or replacing her with lip-syncing supermodels. She didn't have the look, and she didn't have to worry about it anymore. Elliot and Timbaland wrote and produced four songs on Aaliyah's album, titled One in a Million, and the album shot straight to the top of the R&B hip-hop charts. But the songs had such an unusual sound to them, people didn't know what to do at first. Radio DJs were hesitant to play them because Timbaland's stuttering kick drum and Elliot's unusual use of cadence sounded nothing like any of the other songs on the radio. So when they tried to fade into an Aaliyah single from the song before or fade out of her music into the next song in the queue, they couldn't engineer a seamless transition. But everyone was talking about the album, so people bought it. Then it went platinum, then double platinum. Then one day, Elliot ran into Sean Combs, or as he was known then, Puff Daddy. Puff Daddy had heard her work, and he asked Elliot if she still rapped. It was a loaded question, one she wasn't really sure how to answer. So she went with a sheepish, half-committed, yeah. And that was enough for him. Puff Daddy invited her to rap on a track he was working on for Gina Thompson. So she did. And that song went on to become an instant hit. One writer said if the track was a sundae, Elliot's part was the cherry on top. Soon, more and more artists started asking her to rap on their records. And before she knew it, the artist who had fully denounced the performer side of herself was being called hip-hop's new it girl. And that's when she got an offer from Arista Records to make an album as a solo artist. Elliot was flattered, really, but wholly unconvinced. She said the industry had already broken her heart. She'd been dropped, she'd been replaced, she'd been told she wasn't attractive enough. Bolstering other artists was a sweet spot she'd painstakingly carved out for herself, one where she was in control, one she wasn't prepared to walk away from. Well, then Motown came knocking. They also offered Elliot a solo contract. But again, she said she wouldn't do it. She was happy making her mark behind the mixing board. And that's when Elektra Records reappeared. Remember, Elektra was the label that dropped Elliot and her group Sista in the first place. Likely the last label she was interested in hearing from. Except they proposed something a little different. Elektra was so desperate to be in business with hip-hop's It Girl that they made an unprecedented offer. If she signed with Elektra, Elliot would be given her own label under the Elektra banner, onto which she could sign artists she could write or produce. The caveat was that she was also required to make one album of her own. It was an offer she couldn't refuse. Elliot signed the contract. She couldn't wait to bolster other artists with all the resources of a record company behind her. But she had to get that one contract stipulation out of the way first. So Elliot decided she was going to make a solo record, and it was going to be big. Literally. She was going to show up her full self, in her full body, without trying to conform to anyone's unrealistic standards for women. And that was going to be that. She and Timbaland hopped into the studio. They played around with lyrics. Lyrics that got ahead of any criticism about her curves, almost poking fun at the absurdity of it all. If any critic wanted to say something about her weight, she would say it first. And only 2 weeks later, they had Missy Elliott's first solo album, Supa Dupa Fly. On July 15th, 1997, Supa Dupa Fly was released, and they watched it rise on the charts. Number 80, number 30, and it kept going, up, 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 eventually peaking at number 3, breaking the record for highest chart ranking of any female rapper in history. Mary J. Blige called it Supa Dupa Innovative. Mike Diamond of the Beastie Boys said the album changed the face of hip-hop. Soon, Elliot was booked to perform on The Late Show with David Letterman. And within 1 month, she started receiving phone calls from other artists. Mariah Carey wanted to work with her. Whitney Houston wanted to collaborate. Then, Janet Jackson called. At first, Elliot hung up the phone. She hung up on Janet Jackson because she could not, would not believe it was really her idol on the other end of the line. But it was. And in that moment, Elliot says she realized she achieved her childhood dream. She was a superstar. Sales soared on the debut album, surpassing 1 million copies, making it certified platinum. And that year, Rolling Stone named Missy Elliott Rap Artist of the Year. Then Elliott got the news. She was nominated for a Grammy Award. Alongside her solo career, Elliot wrote and produced songs for other artists, including Mariah Carey, Mel B, Whitney Houston, Destiny's Child, Beyoncé, Mary J. Blige, Kelly Rowland, Toni Braxton, Eminem, Janet Jackson, and Timbaland, who, by the way, went on to be a massive success in his own right. And in 2001, Elliot produced the star-studded mega-hit remake of Lady Marmalade by Christina Aguilera, Lil' Kim, Pink, and Maya, making her one of the most sought-after producers in hip-hop. By age 26, Missy Elliott was a millionaire. So she hopped on a plane to Portsmouth, Virginia, and bought her mother, the woman she spent her entire childhood desperate to rescue, a home of her very own. Over the next 10 years, Elliot would release 5 more albums, all certified platinum and beyond. Today, Missy Elliott has sold 30 million albums worldwide. and the little girl who used to scribble lyrics on her walls and sing for her dolls, who was made fun of by her classmates for having big dreams, was rejected by record producers, dropped by music labels, and told she didn't fit the image of the ideal woman in the music business, holds the record for most platinum records of any female rapper in history.
Have you ever crushed a dream? Not your own, someone else's dream. Did you ever hear someone say that they wanted to achieve something big or be someone special, and you just laughed it off or rolled your eyes? It's an important question. Lots of people in this world crush dreams. They'll hear someone say their dream out loud, and it will seem so preposterous at the time, or it will sound more like a pipe dream than a daydream, and people mock it. And that can be crippling, because it takes a lot of courage to say a dream out loud. When Missy Elliott stood up in her class every Friday and said she was going to grow up to be a superstar, they all laughed, every single Friday. Missy has said that she often wonders if those kids even remember her, because she remembers all of them. They probably don't, and that's the sad truth. People can easily crush a dream, then go on their merry way. It was just an insignificant laugh, but it probably left an indelible mark. For some people, being laughed at can be fuel. It can ignite ferocious ambition. But for many others, it can derail them. Once you've been burned in the harsh spotlight of naysayers, you may convince yourself that it's safer in the shadows, and you resign yourself to a life outside of the life you imagined. That's why we all need to take stock of ourselves and make a conscious decision to fan the flames of the people in our lives instead of extinguishing them. It's very possible the person beside you right now has a deep desire to try something bold, something daring, something that seems so outside their current life. And they may be just the person to do it. But if you dismiss their dream, you might just snuff out a future. And what a loss for the world that would be. If you're listening to this right now, and you feel you've had to park your dream because nobody believes in you, if you once dared to say your dream out loud and were laughed at, or if you don't fit the usual traditional mold, remember this. The superstars in this world all came from little towns you've never heard of. They all had to withstand the taunts and the sneering and the small-minded thinking, and they still dreamed big. Never, ever give up.
Missy, Misdemeanor, Elliott. Grammy Awards, 4. Grammy Nominations, 22. MTV Video Music Awards, 8. First female rapper to receive the MTV Michael Jackson Video Vanguard Award, 2019. Inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame, 2019. First female hip-hop artist nominated to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, 2023.
The Rejection Podcast is an Apostrophe Podcast production and is recorded in our Airstream mobile recording studio. This series is hosted and written by me, Sydney O'Reilly. We regret to inform you our researcher is Allison Pinches, director Callie O'Reilly, engineer Jeff Devine, producer Debbie O'Reilly. Our theme music is by Ian Lefevre and Ari Posner. Major sources for this and all episodes are listed in the show notes on our website, apostrophepodcasts.ca/rejection. If you enjoyed this episode, you might also glean a little something from rejecting Misty Copeland. Misty faced a similar brand of rejection to Missy, becoming the first Black female principal dancer at a major ballet company in a world where thinness and whiteness are currency. You can follow our network on social at @ApostropheHPod. This series is executive produced by Terry O'Reilly. See you next time.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.